welcome to today's Job Seeker broadcast for Wednesday, October 17th. So, have you been getting no responses to your job applications? I mean, you haven't received anything. And has it been 2 weeks since you heard from your last interview and you really want to know if you got the job? Well, what about an offer you received which isn't exactly what you wanted? The pay and the benefits are much lower than you expected. Well, if any of these or some other issues are really hindering your job search, I'm glad you tuned in for today, and hopefully your show, this show, will provide you with answers and advice to what's holding you back from landing that very best job. You can join our show's discussion by emailing me your questions. My email address that's forwarded directly to me is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. And today I'm joined by a special guest co-host, Tom Board, out of Denver, Colorado. Tom is one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website, and you can see Tom's picture and bio. Just click Preferred Counselors on our toolbar. Hello, Tom.
Hi, John. Good to be with you today.
Yeah, how are things out there in sunny Denver?
They are sunny. You got that right.
Oh, that's good to hear. Now, for the first 15 minutes of our show, Tom and I will be talking about our topic, sharpening your interview skills. And then we'll take a short break and begin to answer your job hunting questions, giving preference to those that we receive during the show. So, Tom, let's talk about sharpening our interview skills. That's something you and I have dialogued about. Any particular things that you want us to start out with?
Well, I've been thinking about this for a little bit, and I think sometimes it feels like an overwhelming, fearful kind of thing to even know how to begin. So maybe we should just start with that, just asking the question, what should you say in the first 3 minutes of an interview?
Well, that is a very awkward time, and I like to coach our clients to come prepared, sort of like you're walking into a discussion with somebody you've never met before. And you're right, you're all butterflies, you want to make a good impression. And so the thing that I find really helps and calms the jitters is to ask the question. So you're right there with the employer and say, Mr. Jones, I wondered in the beginning of our discussion if you could help me to clarify the job duties for this position. I just want to make sure that I have these correct, and according to what I've read and learned about the position, and then you rattle off in short notes the first three or four or five critical job duties. Now, this does two important things. It gets you talking in a positive way. You sound informed, and even important, you sound confident. Second, the interviewer is you're giving the interviewer some help to get used to you. Surprisingly, that interviewer is not really looking forward to this meeting with you any more than you are, but both of you realize that this is a very important discussion, and it's not something that either of you probably are professionals at doing. So here's a conversation that is not something that is your favorite, and yet you've got to really do a top job. So that's a really good way to start. And then what the interviewer hopefully will do is say something like, yes, that's true, however, and then maybe mention some additional things. These additional things probably are the key. I've seen way too many times where that employer is representing a position that the description is rather old, or someone really didn't take the time to tailor it, and maybe a couple of things have happened in the last week or so that have caused the position to shift a little bit. So that's a really good way to start.
Now, when you're with people, obviously different interviewers are going to use different kind of styles as they kind of approach you. How do you help people with the different kinds of interviewing styles? What do you have to say about that?
Yeah, good question. There are two basic styles of interview, and I believe they come from the nature of the interviewer. We always assume, well, this interviewer is really trained and schooled in how to interview. Not the case. Most of the time, they're not. And so I find that a more intuitive person, a person who is more analytical in nature, will ask open-ended questions that sound like, what is he getting at? You don't really know what the person is searching for. And the question will be something like, tell me something about yourself. Why did you even decide to go to college? What is it that you really look forward to when you go to work? Those are just wide open. You don't even know where to start. The other type of question is more of a checklist approach, and this person is gathering data. They want the facts, they want the details, they want your accomplishments, your achievements, and most likely they're taking notes, and they're going to compare your list of data that you give them to the next candidate. There isn't this more in between the lines intuitive evaluation that is going on. This person probably doesn't read people very well, whereas the more intuitive analytical person does. So those tend to be the, you know, and then we have everything in between those two extremes.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say that'd be a good way to classify interview styles.
Now, does it make a difference what you're like as a person as far as how you answer those? Let's say you're more analytical or more data gathering. Will that create a different way of handling those two different styles?
Well, in a way, yes. But in coaching our clients, Tom, I encourage them to be prepared for both.
For both.
You've got to be ready. And when you get the question, you can almost begin to tell the style or nature of the individual. This particular question, tell me something about yourself, has been around for decades and decades. It is a favorite. And unfortunately, sometimes if a person does go to a how to interview, employers interview training 101, they'll be told, oh, always ask this question, but then they don't know what to do with it if they're more of a checklist type person. So here's the kind of how our listener should prepare for this. If you're asked the question, tell me something about yourself, and I'm sort of jumping ahead to another interview skill technique here. You should be ready to answer three command interview questions. The first is, why are you interested in the position? Second, what are your essential qualifications that put you ahead of everyone else for the position? And the third is, how did your last position prepare you for this position? A person should be ready to answer those three questions, and if they're never asked, they must answer those questions during the interview. So, if someone says, tell me something about yourself, the response would be, would you like to know why I'm interested in this position, or would you like to know about my key qualifications that I feel match this position very well, or would you like to know how my last position prepared me for this? And that would be their response. The checklist approach is probably the easier interview style, and you just flat out answer what they've asked and wait for the next one. You do have to be careful sometimes where if an interviewer does not, if there's a pause and they don't continue, if they're not on a roll, so to speak, you have to be careful of butting in too much, but you should not allow a lot of lag time in between the questions, be ready to add a little more if time allows.
Okay. Now, how do you discuss just your past work experiences? How do you prepare for something like that? What needs to be said for something like that?
Okay, that's excellent. To prepare for telling what you've done, and this the essential of this is it's a lot of homework. You must go back to all your previous work history and job by job select the achievements and accomplishments that are quantifiable and verifiable. And what I'm talking about is, let's say you're in sales. You want to be dealing with numbers like increased market share by 12%. Won the salesperson of the month award consecutively for 10 months. If you're in management and sales management, sales team led the company in the last 2 years in terms of volume of sales. You want specific percentages, numbers, money saved, money lost, time saved. If you introduced new systems and new procedures, in addition to just saying that, you want to tell how that specifically benefited your company or department. So this is going to take a lot of time. We're not talking 30 minutes. We're talking hours. And I know clients have howled and howled about this and how much time it takes. You can't hire someone to write your resume and sort of invent these things. You literally have to go back. Now, when I was working for XYZ Company, what were at least three things that were noteworthy that I did that improved the company's position or made my work outstanding? I received a certificate or an award, et cetera, et cetera.
Very good. Another question I've had that has come to me is, are there certain kinds of questions that I should just avoid during an interview?
Absolutely, yes. This is huge. Favorite question an employer has is, how much money are you looking for, or what were you paid in your last position? It's the financial. They want to know what your price tag is. You must avoid that question at all costs. You're either going to be too high or too low. Another favorite question that employers will ask is regarding benefits. What kind of benefits are you looking for in terms of your medical, vacation, bonuses, and so on? So having said that, we're going to go to a break here, Tom, and we can pick this up after the break.
Okay.
This is such a good question.
Okay, John, we have a short 2-minute break. Today we've been talking about job search tips, but you do a lot more for men and women who are struggling with mid-career issues.
That's right, Evan, we do. We help men and women find that career sweet spot which can give meaning and purpose to their life.
So, John, what about boomers, those who are approaching retirement age? There are a lot of us out there.
That's right, Evan, many millions. We provide very specific help to boomers and their families.
You mean that the choice what to do after retirement is just as important as selecting one's career at 20 years of age?
Well, Evan, think on this. Let's say you've been grinding it out, just waiting for that 25-year gold pin, and now that's where you are. Does that mean your life of significance and purpose ends? You've heard that the new 65 is the old 45. A person still has 10, 15, maybe 20 more productive years ahead of them.
Well, I never thought of it that way.
Well, we help adults, many adults, find that ideal post-retirement career. For once, they don't have to be trapped into their occupation. They can be free to choose to give it back to make a difference.
But, John, why couldn't a mid-30s person choose to do that?
Well, they most certainly can, and I hope they will. But some of us have been so close to the grindstone of work that we have never considered looking into the future of making a difference or giving back.
Okay, John. I want to discuss this further, that is, considering a purpose for what we do beyond a paycheck and benefits. Can we talk some more about this during the next break?
Sure, you bet.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And so we are back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor Tom Board from Denver, Colorado, and he's one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. And if you just tuned in, you can see Tom's picture and bio on our website. So, Tom, we just, before the break, we're right in the middle of talking about questions to avoid, and I know we have several other questions that listeners have sent in. But can we just finish up on that? I think I was talking about this issue of avoiding questions about how much money, how much pay,
right,
salary, benefits, and perks.
Right.
Yeah. And so the issue here is that your price tag, how much it's going to cost the employer to hire you, is probably the most important thing that the employer wants to figure out right from the get-go. And you're always going to be either too high or too low. And the key is, if the employer likes you, then that employer is going to be much more flexible to accommodate a pay increase or better benefits and so on, if the employer likes you. Well, the way you know the employer likes you is you get an offer. So that's why it's so important to avoid this question. Now, when you're flat out asked, look, I really need to know, and you've already tried to dodge the question and say, here's the first dodge. Mr. Jones, thank you. Definitely income is important in any employment, but at this point in our discussion, I was hoping we could focus our talk about my qualifications for the position, and if we find that we have a mutual interest, that I fit the position, perhaps we can talk about the compensation later at that point. And so that's your first dodge. Then the employer comes back and says, no, I really need to know what you were paid in your last job or what type of money you're looking for here. So the next approach is, as I have done research on this position, I find that the salary range is, and you could Google what the range is for your position, is X to X, and I am very comfortable with that range. And that's probably the best response. You know, if the person keeps persisting, then you're going to have to say what your compensation was. But, you know, that's just, you kind of want to be ready with those things. And Tom, let me just highlight one last thing about this sharpening your interview skills. There are, for every person, things that the individual's uncomfortable about. They don't know what to say. They've been asked a certain question before and they stumble all over it. Do not try to wing it. Do not try to just have the answer in your mind and then hope it's going to come out well. Only professional actors know how to do that, and even they have to rehearse their lines. So the thing to do is, when you know there are particular questions that may be difficult for you, you got to get a recorder out, and you got to say it into the recorder, play it back and listen. Listen for the tone. Listen for how you enunciate the words. Make sure you use words that you like and are comfortable with. Don't learn new words, and let it just flow. And when you stumble all over, that's okay. Say it again into the recorder and play it. And even if you have to go back five times, and the point is, during the interview, you will not be as cool, calm, and collected as you are at home practicing. There are going to be distractions. There's going to be another person looking at you. And so you've got to rehearse this in such a way that it's almost second nature, just flows. Yes, that employer is picking up body language and cues that you're nervous and that sort of indicates that maybe you're not telling the truth. Well, you are telling the truth. It's just that you're stumbling here. Unfortunately, the person that gets hired is the person who's the best interviewer, not the person who's best qualified. So you've got to overcome that hurdle and be a good interviewer in addition to someone who's highly qualified. So, Tom, with all that said, maybe we should move to the questions that we've been receiving. Got a good number here of just different predicaments and situations that people have written us about.
I think that's a great idea. Let's start off with Jonathan from Oregon. He writes, I'm getting married and want to work as a teacher internationally. Do I need a teaching certificate? I have a bachelor's degree, but do I need a teaching degree?
Okay, well, in the fact that Jonathan is getting married, we're assuming that Jonathan's yet-to-be-married wife is also open to the international idea. I think that's important. It's not a good idea to be thinking in this as a single person saying, well, I want to go international, and, oh, by the way, I'm just getting married. That's going to be a huge question that the interviewer is going to ask if the interviewer finds out that you're just newly married. Now, here's some good news. There are many, many opportunities to teach internationally. There are schools that are desperately looking for United States Americans to come and teach. Even something as simple as teaching English as a second language. These opportunities to teach internationally do not require more than a bachelor's. As a matter of fact, I've even seen advertised, just because I go to these places and see this, that a particular organization would give the teacher a master's degree if they would come and teach for a couple of years, and that they would receive a master's in if they were to come and teach for that organization. South Korea is a place that welcomes Americans to come and teach. That tends to be a very popular place. And let me say even this, that this is such a area of demand that there are cities in the United States where they host job fairs for teaching internationally. And so all the schools will send reps to those cities on certain dates, and they will interview applicants. So this is a very hot area. You we're not even talking about the qualifications you need. That isn't the question. The question was, well, where do I find the employers? And I think that covers the topic.
That's very good. I have another question here from Elizabeth in Maine. She says, I have been a bank executive for over 20 years and want to work for a college university in development. I have not been able to get any interviews. Can you help with some suggestions?
Well, Tom, you and I have seen quite a bit of this where somebody is in the for-profit sector and is now wanting to make a transition to the not-for-profit sector, which would be the college university setting. Have you Have you, Tom, noticed any attitudinal or work environment issues that people need to work through in making that kind of a change?
Well, I think you're right. It's a very different culture, and I think one of the things to be aware of, especially in a college university setting, is that they're much slower in making decisions about that. And many times it's about relationship in a much different way. It's not just can you work on a team, but how well do you fit with their philosophy and what they're thinking and the way that they like to approach their values as an institution. So that's a little bit of how I've seen the difference. What have you seen?
Yes, and I know you have quite a bit of experience working in that environment. And, yes, I get that complaint a lot. Now, this Elizabeth has indicated she has a preference for development. That's fundraising. And so anytime you're making a career change where your work experience and background is in field A and you're wanting to move to field B, the absolute essential, the very first step is you've got to make sure you've met somebody that is doing that B job in this case, it'd be college university setting. So Elizabeth first needs to talk to someone who is doing development work in a college university. Small colleges, and I'm talking campuses of, let's say, 500 or less, will maybe have a maximum of two people in that office. Larger campuses will have different levels where you have someone that's dealing with some of the larger types of gifts, which would be real estate, stock, securities, and so on, all the way to someone who's dealing with the small monthly of $10, $25 a month. And these individuals are slotted in that strata based on their background experience. Elizabeth needs to know this, and when finding out about how these departments are configured, it's better if Elizabeth, if she's seeking employment in Maine, somewhere in the state of Maine, if she wants to go maybe somewhere to inquire that would not be a campus of preference. Because you don't want to come back a few months later and start interviewing when you were just green and getting your information together. So step one, you really need to understand. Now, once you have that information, I'd say banking is a very good background because it's definitely financial. We'll pick this up after the break. We're getting that break signal again.
We're taking a short 2-minute break to ask John Bradley some questions about pursuing a post-retirement career to give back, to give meaning and purpose. John, in our last break, you suggested that the idea of a career being something bigger than a paycheck is a worthy thought for a boomer, but also for a 30-something career seeker.
That's right, Evan. We can truly choose a post-retirement career as well as an occupation which provides sufficient income, stability, vacation perks, and still make a difference. And that's because our team has a working knowledge of over 90,000 careers, and many of those fit that description.
Well, John, why wouldn't everyone want meaning and purpose?
Well, unfortunately, many of us have not considered that final layer of preference for our retirement or our present work life. We kind of get caught up in the trap of staying employed and reading all the How to Succeed, Move Up the Ladder books and blogs. Many of those helps are valid, but they may not be the best for everyone.
Well, John, for the next break, could you give us some examples of the difference between grinding out a job and finding a career which provides meaning and purpose, even for someone like a boomer?
Sure, let's do it.
Thanks, John. If you just turned in, our Job Seeker weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDEC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. You can join our discussion today by emailing us your job search questions. Those questions received during the live broadcast will be given John's priority for discussion. Our address for questions is jobseeker@idacgroup.com. That's jobseeker@idacgroup.com. John, let's return to our broadcast.
And we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor Tom Board from Denver, Colorado. Tom's one of our 12 preferred counselors featured on our website. Tom, when we went into the break, we were talking about this transition that Elizabeth is anticipating, and she's wanting to get into development work and has been in banking for a good long while. And I think I was just saying that there are some common links there. One very important thing in job interviewing, employers are terrible at connecting dots. They want it all laid out in front of them. Exactly how do you meet these qualifications? So don't assume that they get it. You've got to just paint that picture and color inside the lines and underline and so on. So it's Elizabeth's responsibility to go back to her banking background and to begin to draw from that things that she did, relationships she's had, perhaps, banking executives are on a lot of boards. And so possibly if Elizabeth was in civic groups or community groups or boards, those would be excellent things because they're all nonprofits. And they lend themselves to sort of show that she is sympathetic and compatible and so on. Now, in her job search, and we've talked about this in other broadcasts, matter of fact, Tom, you and I think, have talked about this, Elizabeth is going to have to conduct the hidden job search. She is going to have to, on her own, connect with colleges rather than sit and wait for vacancies. If all her job search is just answering vacancy notices about development, she's not going to get the first base because those people that have prior experience will be competing with her. So she's going to have to develop a strategy to start relationships with colleges and universities on her own and develop that rapport and then work it into helping that organization raise funds.
Absolutely. Very good. I have another question here from Joseph from Phoenix, Arizona. He writes, I interviewed with a company 2 weeks ago and haven't heard back. How can I find out results without being a bother? I have emailed the interviewer twice with no answer. Thanks for your help.
Yeah. Boy, you hear this a lot. You had a great interview, and maybe they said, we'll get back to you, and it's been 2 weeks. And how do you keep, hey, I'm interested. I want to know. This is too late for Joseph, but this is an important tip. When you're done with that interviewer, you ask or make a statement, I'm very interested in this position. I appreciate this time. And what would you say is the next step that we need to take? You're kind of what they call in sales closing the interview. And the interviewer is going to say something like, don't call us, we'll call you, or we'll let you know, that kind of thing. And your response should be something like this. Thank you for this time. You indicated that in a week or so you would get back. In case I haven't heard from you by Friday the 12th, would it be all right if I contact you back? You're getting permission to get back to them. Then after the interview, the day after, you handwrite a thank you note, handwrite it, mail it to the person. In the note, after you say thank you and so on, you indicate, appreciate the opportunity to get back to you if I don't hear from you by the 13th or the 12th. So you're reinforcing that. That really, really works. Well, it's too late for Joseph to do that. I would say if Joseph hasn't heard and he's emailed twice, this is going to sound pretty risky and gutsy, Tom. And usually when clients bring this up, I try to gather all the information. What's going on? Is this person going to be out of town? Well, first, I would call and ask the secretary. That would be my first shot. I had an interview on the 12th and haven't heard, and I just didn't want to be a bother, but the interviewer had indicated in about a week or so, it's been a couple of weeks. Can you help me with information, or would I have can you put a call through to so-and-so just to talk further? And usually that secretary receptionist is very helpful. If there is no secretary receptionist, maybe you interview with the president and you don't have access to that other individual, you have everything to gain and really not a lot to lose if you just drop by. And that would be sort of the last case scenario. If you feel like this thing's slipping away. So those would be my suggestions on how not to be a bother, but yet you might wait 3 weeks to drop by if it came down to that. But every situation is so different, but this is very, very, very common.
Is there a reason why getting back to someone right away is so important?
Well, I'll tell you this, that a good candidate is not going to stick around. I do a lot of training of companies on how to interview candidates, and that's one thing I say. You find somebody good, move. Let them know you like them and get them on the next track. Schedule the next interview. And so if there is a delay, let's just assume that every employer is operating on that principle. So if a week goes by and you haven't heard, most likely one of two things is going on. There's a better candidate, A, and B, the employer is tied up with other business items and the screening of job applicants is now in third priority. There's some other things that are weighing there. And I have seen that happen a lot, particularly in small businesses. This whole idea of interviewing a candidate is not a preferred thing. It's not an enjoyable thing. And so there's a subconscious, oh, well, we'll get around to it kind of thing. I remember a family-owned business, and they were interviewing for a very, very critical position. And they must have interviewed 10 or more candidates, including one of our clients. And I had coached our client because they didn't get back to him. And finally our client was able to get some inside information. And it turned out it was a big argument going on between the family members as to whether they even wanted to hire somebody, let alone who was the better candidate. And this went on for a month.
My goodness.
Of course, our client was pulling his hair out. And we did figure out a way for him to get back in there and so on and so on. So that's just unfortunate. This brings to mind one item that I have used as a nice kind of a reminder technique. If an employer has said that we'll get back to you in about a week and 2 weeks have gone by, if there's some new information in the news or about the industry or about foreign competition and so on that our client can package, put it into an email, and just send it as an FYI. I just came across this and wondered if you had noticed this. Look forward to hearing from you, and you know, best regards and so on. That is a very effective way without coming right out and saying, why haven't you called me?
That's very good. Well, I have another question here from Ralph, California here. How do you answer the question about being fired from my last job? There seems to be a change in the interview's expression when I say that I was dismissed. Should I say that I just quit? Good question.
Yeah. You know, all of us have been fired at some point in time in our life. And sometimes it was warranted, you know, wake-up call. Sometimes it was not fair. So the first and most important thing is don't dig yourself in a hole. You feel embarrassed about it. You feel bad. You feel hurt. And there's a service that we provide. It's called outplacement, and that's for individuals who have been fired, and the company hires us to help that person get a new job. And I would say for at least a month, I'm dealing with bitterness and anger. You can't interview with new employers if you're still spitting nails. We have to let that water go over the dam. But that's in a sense beside the point. This comes back to one of the employer or the interviewing tips we mentioned earlier, Tom, and that's the individual. This is a sensitive question. They're stumbling over it. They've got to get their recorder out, and they have to give it a response and listen to it and then rehearse it again and again and keep fine-tuning the words. The employer is looking for the eyebrows getting knit together. Maybe you're squinting. Maybe you're tightening up. Your hands are squeezing into fists, et cetera, white knuckles and so on. They're looking for that. And if you're able to just, in a body language way, come up with a statement, because you've rehearsed it 10 times, really speaks to your advantage. And I would offer to the listener the comment, unfortunately, I think all of us that are out there in the workforce have had an unfortunate situation where we have been terminated where we wanted to stay. And, yes, I experienced that. My one time was in this last job, and it was very sad. I wish it wasn't so. If you would like me to discuss the circumstances, I'd be happy to do that. If you would like to talk to my employer, here's his name and phone number. That just kind of puts it all on the table. And so coming up to our last break here, Tom, we'll talk in a minute.
We're taking a short two-minute break at the final quarter of our show to ask John Bradley how one can choose to find meaning and purpose in a post-retirement career as well as a new 30-something job. John, you started this discussion saying that boomers are now free to choose to pursue something fulfilling, to give back.
That's right, Evan.
And then I asked, why can't a 30-something person make that choice? And you said they could. They just had to be intentional to add that third layer of purpose rather than just the paycheck. So here's my question. Can you give us an example of someone who has done this?
Well, Evan, I recall a client who worked for this same employer for 35 years as a director of quality control and manufacturing. There was a change in management, and our client was transitioned out. As he and I began to discuss his next chapter in life, I challenged him to think about pursuing something that felt like he was making a difference, something meaningful to him.
So this was a real person?
Yes, it was a real person. Let's call him Phil. He had 1 year of community college and felt like his life wouldn't really amount to much. All he thought he could do was find a similar job and then after a few more years retire, buy a big motor home, and drive coast to coast.
I've seen a few of those.
Well, as we began to explore Phil's aptitude assessment results, he pointed to a couple of the printout options and said, "You know, I always wanted to do something for troubled kids, for teenagers."
So what happened?
A long story short, he got hired by a county government agency to administrate the placement of foster teens in good homes.
Did he have some prior experience to get that?
Not at all. We helped him plan a strategy after he met the person who had his job.
You mean he first looked at several careers you suggested, then chose this one because of the on-site validation visit?
That's right. And in his job search, he bypassed many who had four-year college degrees and even graduate school degrees. And you know, Phil had only 1 year of community college with no prior experience.
Well, I think I'm speaking for our listening audience when I say that this is a great example, and I wish we had time to find out how you helped him do it.
Yes, that's true, Evan, but then that is what these job seeker broadcasts are all about. I am sharing the same things I taught Phil, all these lessons learned, and he did it, and it worked for him.
John, this has been a most interesting journey.
Well, thanks, Evan.
I want to encourage any of you who are feeling the stress of a dead-end job to go to our website, www.idacgroup.com, and make contact with one of our preferred counselors. Each of these seasoned men and women are professionals at helping you discover your wiring. You will see the reference preferred counselors at the top of our toolbar. John, we still have the last quarter of your show.
Let's do it.
If you just tuned in, our Job Seeker Weekly broadcast is sponsored by the IDAC Group, hosted by job search and career advancement expert John Bradley, who has been coaching men and women since the mid-70s to find fulfilling work. I'm Evan Newman. And now, John, let's return to the final quarter of our show.
And so we're back to our Job Seeker broadcast. My special guest today is Counselor Tom Board from Denver. And Tom, we were just before the break talking about Ralph in California that was struggling with being dismissed. Did we finish that up, or were there any?
No, I think you really did, and I actually felt that you were very helpful in helping him to recognize that he's going to need to have a response to this that really communicates both an honesty but a comfortableness in which to be able to communicate to the interviewer that this is something he's learned from, and it's not an issue for them to be actually considering as they consider him for the job.
Yeah, and all employers have terminated people. I mean, I'm an employer, and I've had that unfortunate situation where I had to terminate some. Most of the time, there wasn't any criminal issue or theft or something of that nature. Usually it's a personality issue or misunderstanding. Employers understand that. Now, I want to be quick to say, if there is a termination and it's for cause and it is a serious issue, then the listener is going to have to get some coaching on how to work through that. It's just not something you're going to be able to throw together in 30 minutes. I have coached individuals with that particular problem, and it's taken us a good while to come around to deal with it. The hidden job search is probably the best strategy to avoid talking about why you were fired, should that ever come up. It is a typical question, however, if you're answering vacancy ads, employers like to ask that question. Were you ever fired from a job? That's one of those checklist questions. Okay, I think we've beat this one up enough. Let's go to another one, Tom.
All right. Let's talk about Dwayne from Oregon. He said, "I have been working in my father-in-law's dental lab. My bachelor's degree is in marketing, and I'm not getting any marketing experience. How do I get a marketing job with no real work experience?"
Well, that's that's a very, with today's economy, that's a very real question. I want to commend Dwayne that he married well. So he got a job. And it sounds like he's been in there a while, and perhaps maybe father-in-law is not letting him stretch his wings. Who's to say? Tom, you might disagree with me on this, but having a bachelor's degree in marketing really is not that big a deal out there in the business world. There just are way too many individuals that have bachelor's degree in marketing, and they cannot market their way out of a paper bag. What counts in business is experience. And Dwayne is telling us the only experience I have, paid experience, is working for my dental lab. So if Dwayne wants to get into marketing, this is sort of like coaching 101 that I give to my clients. What Dwayne needs to do is he needs to enroll in his local community college in some type of marketing class. I understand he already has a degree. He needs to find some specialty area of marketing, and maybe it's only 2 units. He doesn't have to take it for credit. He needs to enroll. And then what Dwayne needs to do is, once he's enrolled, he needs to candidate, go out there, beat the doors for a field experience. Not an internship, a field experience. The word internship evokes a more formal type of program. And half of your businesses out there are 20 people or less, and they are not going to have formal internship programs. So field experience is the better term to use. And you're out there door knocking to get a field experience. And that's roughly 15 hours a week. And you also want to have a particular project that you and the employer agree to. Now, that will get Dwayne a job in marketing, as opposed to just trying to sell himself on his bachelor's degree. Any further on that we should discuss, Tom?
No, I think that's exactly my experience with people, is that they need to get some sort of an opportunity to be able to create something for a resume, for a conversation that could say, I have done something here with this. That opens the next door. So I agree with you on that. That's
yeah, and the ideal here, and why most employers are going to be open to field experience, is it gives you a chance to check somebody out for free. I mean, you're finding out what the person is like and so on. And when I'm coaching clients to use the field experience as part of their job strategy, you know, I want to make sure that there might be a part-time or full-time job after the field experience is concluded, as opposed to just doing it and shaking hands and walking away. I mean, yes, you gain some experience, but there's no job attached to it. There is that caveat that is also part of the process. But Dwayne really needs more than just that classroom know-how. He's got to understand the way the world turns and what is working and what isn't, and what particular niche of marketing that he wants to go into.
Very good. Let's try another one here, John. Another gentleman from Alaska here. His name is Bill, and he writes, I want a post-retirement job in international medical disaster and relief. I'm selling my pharmacy. Where should I start looking?
Oh, excellent. So if Bill is going to international medical disaster relief, most likely this is a nonprofit. There are two kinds of nonprofit. There's non-religious nonprofit, and there are religious nonprofit. And you would look for names of agencies in two different lists. for the non-religious nonprofit, the best, the absolute best list is GuideStar.org. It is a free service, and you can select the classification code for international disaster relief, and you will get a host of organizations, and you need to begin corresponding with them. The fact that Bill has been an owner of a pharmacy, it puts him way up on the desirable list, and so Phil needs to, Bill needs to be willing to assist in the handling, storage, and distribution of the pharmacies, the drugs, as a beginning point before he would morph into some other roles that he may have in mind, because that's going to be the most transferable. That's what's making him the most attractive, that he understands and knows all that medical, those products and that nomenclature. The second category of nonprofits are religious. And so the second website would be ministrywebdirectory.com. And so, again, you would go on that site, and you would get names of organizations that do disaster relief. So I think that's our show, Tom. Thank you, and we're coming up here to the close.
And so that brings to a close our Job Seeker broadcast for this week. Our host has been job search and career advancement expert John Bradley. John is president and founder of the IDAC Group, and he's been helping mid-career men and women find their sweet spot since 1973. In addition to counseling mid-career men and women, John has authored 4 career advancement books. The IDAC Group has assisted over 30,000 career seekers nationwide, and John has personally trained over 600 counselors, college professors, and consultants in career advancement and job search. He's personally selected 12 of these 600 whom he features as preferred counselors on his website. These men and women are independent practitioners whom John has personally trained. They are not employees nor affiliated with the IDAC Group, and they have not paid any fee to be featured on this broadcast nor on IDAC's website. They are good, honest professionals who have gained John's approval over many years of successful practice. I'm Evan Newman, and I encourage you to join us next week at the same time for our next live broadcast. Do you know someone who is frustrated in their job search? Why not send them a tweet, email, or Facebook note about our free broadcast? Maybe your friend can learn something which will land them that next job. We invite you to participate in our broadcast by sending your job search questions during our live broadcast. Those questions received during the live broadcast will receive John's priority attention. Thanks for listening, best wishes, and may God bless you in your job search.